Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This is the broadcast for February the 23rd in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. Absolutely, we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a lot to talk about today. I'll tell you what, let's start with a recap of yesterday's broadcast. We had our guest on, Mr. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, ronpaulinstitute.org, doing a great job for Campaign for Liberty. We talked about this incredible article written by Sarah Lilly, What is So Special About the Capitol? And she points out that, you know what, why do these elites think that the Capitol building or the elite place where, bureaucrats are housed, you know, you would say elected officials, but with vote fraud and everything else, big money going into campaigns, and they're not really elected officials to a great degree. I know that's sad. I know people want to believe that the vote's all intact and all is well, but it isn't true. You say, Sam, you're undermining the very fabric of our republic. No. Those who are perverting the vote are undermining the very fabric of America. For me to call a halt to that con game is actually defending the fabric of the greatest country on the face of the earth. This sacred idea about a vote is important, right? And don't blame it on me because people are messing up the voting process in America. I'm just calling a halt to their shenanigans and dishonesty and saying we've got to get to the bottom of it. Going to your local precincts, to your state, to your county are the answer. Going to the federal government is not the answer. But I don't hear anybody focusing on that but me, really. Anyway, I bring this up because we need to stand tall for liberty, folks. And we can't just set aside these things. We can't just say the vote's stolen, we've given up. We've got to bring back vote count integrity. Let me say that again. We need to bring back vote count integrity. All right? And that's something really, really important to understand. And I don't bring this up to be negative about America. I don't bring this up to down America. I bring this up because I believe that's one of the brilliant portions of our constitutional republic. There are democratic principles that do relate to our constitutional republic. Now, we don't have a democracy. That's a lie. But there are democratic principles that do relate. Anyway, so this incredible column basically says, you know what? What's so special about the Capitol? Why are they above reproach? We've had riots in our streets all summer long, and the Democrats not only ignored it in many cases, but they backed it in many cases. They literally doubled down and made you believe that that was legitimate and okay and fine to destroy private and public property. They made you believe it was okay for the violence because the ends justified the means. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Hey, these people have no other venue but to riot. Da-da-da. Going up, you know what? Payback is necessary. And they went along with it. But then when it's the Capitol, they just absolutely come unglued like it's a terrorist, like it's an insurrection, like it's a... What's the difference, is her point? And I think she's right. Not that I'm justifying rioting, the destruction of property, or violence in any case. But her point is, why is the Capitol so, what do they call that word? Sacrosanct? But yet the streets of America, the average city or your home or my home or whatever neighborhood, why is it not really a big deal then? But when it's the Capitol, it's a huge deal. See, and that's the point we're getting at. Were these attempts to overthrow the government? Maybe by a few individuals who should be prosecuted completely. But most people, and this is the narrative that no one's willing to really highlight in the media, except for a few conservative talk show hosts. The majority of the people that went to the Capitol were not violent. They were humble, Trump-following, praying Christians who meant peace and who meant to say, look, we do believe there's vote fraud. and we would like this to be investigated. We don't have all the evidence because, you know what? A lot of this is not information that we have unless we can subpoena, unless we can, investigate, unless we can have a due process, right? And so a lot of us don't have all the answers, nor do we claim we do. But we're sick of them telling us before we can, you know what, enter a discovery phase in a due process of law court situation. They say, oh, you're crazy. This isn't true. There's no evidence. There's plenty of anecdotal evidence. There's plenty of witness evidence. There's plenty of circumstantial concerns. Okay, we don't have all the goods, nor did we ever say we did. But we do have enough to certainly investigate. We do certainly have enough to enter a discovery phase in court without a doubt. But they say without evidence, without any, as if there's no discovery period that takes place. But yet they want to go over Donald Trump on it over his tax returns without evidence. But what they want is investigative powers. Now they say the court's given us access to Donald Trump's IRS records. Now let's do the digging and find what we think we were looking for. So on one side of the coin, when it comes to Donald Trump's records, they know they don't have the goods, but they say we have enough to think we have more. We want to investigate. We want to dig in. We want discovery. Now they're getting it. But the same should be true for the vote situation. You know what? We don't know all what's in the vote records. We don't know all what has been covered up as votes leave the normal precinct areas and the normal county transparency areas and go up sometimes to foreign nations, foreign servers, sometimes to... Okay, we don't know all that yet. That's why we need to investigate. That's why we need discovery. That's why we need due process of law. But in the IRS case of Donald Trump, they don't have the goods, but they claim they need to, well, dig in so they can get the goods. Same thing with the, quote, Trump-Russia tie lie. Let me say that again, the Trump-Russia tie lie, right? Okay, they don't have the goods. They never did. And in that case, they dug in, and came back empty-handed. But when it comes to election fraud, they're saying you don't even have the right to look into this. You're somehow a conspiracy theorist. You're somehow making these allegations without evidence. It's already proven to be completely bogus. How can they say that when the discovery phase, right, when the subpoena power, when the investigative phase, when the due process of law has not even happened yet? Because they're dishonest. Anyway, the whole circle around is what's so important about the Capitol? Why is it a much more sacred place than your neighborhood, ladies and gentlemen? And that's the exact point that needs to be made. It isn't. And so is it wrong to destroy property? Absolutely. Is it wrong to commit violence? Absolutely. If you truly have insurrectionist views in your heart and in your mind, and you're doing your best to carry that out, you should be stopped and prosecuted. But the majority of the people at the Capitol were well within their rights, and they had a complete peaceful desire to get to the truth and to look into vote fraud. And that got completely shut down and obliterated. And that's how you kind of know there's some problems here. Why did we jettison the whole narrative of looking into vote fraud over this? No one's even talking about it now. It's not even on the table now for most. How did they get out of that one? Well, all you got to do is get a few people to go violent, blame it on everybody else, shut down the discussions and move along. Nothing to see here, gentlemen. Move along. Okay, that is a dishonest lie, and you know that it's a lie. So a false flag, really, in my opinion, at the Capitol. The masses were betrayed who had peaceful, good intentions by the few. And now it's hey, all bets are off. We're not going to even really look into vote fraud. And that's the most disappointing thing about this. Why did we get juked and so easily deflected from our target? Huh? We never really debated the vote fraud. We never really got the chance to drag out the evidence in the courts or before Congress. None of those opportunities really came to fruition. The court simply said, you don't have standing, or we're not going to judge the case on its merits. We're going to throw them all out. By the way, there's no evidence, they claim. And then when we try to go to the Congress, then this insurrection false flag occurs by the few to betray the many. And now we're not even talking about it in Congress either. What a shame. By the way, flashback, Anthony Fauci, whacked out as he is, giving absolutely dishonest advice everywhere he goes. He should be fired. Trump should have fired him, but Trump didn't have the guts. Now Biden hopefully will fire him, but time will tell. But flashback, Fauci described Ebola quarantines as draconian, warns of unintended consequences back in 2014. So the bottom line is Fauci's lost all credibility. It's the problem, folks. Sad to say, but true story. Central planning of your immune system is dangerous, writes Davis Taylor. Mandated vaccinations constitute, quote, state planning of our immune systems, he says, and they're as harmful to our bodies, to our cells, as economic central planning is to our society. Great point. Well, they go on and talk about manufacturers of vaccinations are shielded from liability under the, quote, National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, NVICP, meaning you can't sue them. Taxpayers have to pay for the damages. The companies that make the vaccines are off the hook. They did this. This is unprecedented. There's no other industry like this where there's no accountability whatsoever, really. And why are the manufacturers shielded from liability? Because vaccines aren't safe and aren't effective. When they get sued over and over and over and over, they can't handle it. They'll go out of business. So the government put this in place where the taxpayers will take the heat. The vaccine companies can create their products without any accountability, without any real oversight. To date, if you don't believe me, ladies and gentlemen, over $4 billion. I said billion with a B. $4 billion has been paid out by the taxpayers for harm caused by vaccines. That was hour one yesterday at Liberty Roundtable Live. Sorry for the sidetrack. I think it was worth the discussion, though. Hang tight. Liberty Roundtable Live. I am Sam Bushman.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. We're in the middle of the breakdown of yesterday's broadcast. Imagine it taking so long. Sorry, I digress a little bit in my delivery, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour, we had Dr. Scott Bradley with us. To Preserve the Nation, his collegiate series, books, videos, stand and deliver presentations on the Constitution, homeschool series, and more. To Preserve the Nation. It's all available at freedomsrisingsun.com. That is his website where he has weekly webinars, Q&As on the Constitution, and more. Check it out. He also joins us Mondays and Fridays on your radio. Dr. Scott Bradley, freedomsrisingsun.com. And in 2017, under President Donald Trump, the Department of Justice declared Operation Choke Point formally over. And at the end of Donald Trump's term, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency established fair access rules to create or solidify the demise of Operation Choke Point. So Trump tried to shut it down is the point you need to know. But ladies and gentlemen, Biden resurrecting an Obama policy of killing businesses with rules. You see, Eric Holder back in the Obama administration created what's called Operation Choke Point 1.0. All right, Operation Choke Point literally targeted industries that the left hates. Bob Unruh, WND.com is where the article is. But anyway, so you had Choke Point 1.0 under Barack Obama. Then Trump tried to get rid of it. And then you had you have now Operation Choke Point 2.0 being resurrected by Joe Biden himself. Okay, under Operation Choke Point, ladies and gentlemen, you need to understand that federal regulators instructed banks to discriminate against entire industries that the Obama administration, now the Biden administration, finds objectionable. All right, Operation Choke Point, the problem with it, ladies and gentlemen, is that it bypasses public input and the legislative process, leaving politically unpopular individuals defenseless, left to defend for themselves. All right, the problem with Operation Choke Point, ladies and gentlemen, is it's criminal. What it says is if you're a gun manufacturer, if you're a gun store, a gun dealer, if you deal in loans that are high-risk loans or whatever else, then we're going to shut your businesses down. We're going to say your company is too high-risk. Okay, but it's absolutely a lie because they point to these vague, too high-risk areas, and then they really point to cooperating with government. Let me give you an example. They're pointing at talk show hosts, Dennis Prager, Sam Bushman, James Edwards, Alex Jones. I could go on and on and on and on. But they're literally attacking us relentlessly under this Operation Choke Point. So let me give you an example. The Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association had, I can't remember if it was 2012 or 2014, but it was under the Barack administration. And we were going to have a conference. And the conferences are very expensive. We pay for hotels for a lot of sheriffs. We raise a lot of money. By the way, if you want to donate, CSPOA.org, donate liberally. We're having a conference coming up at the end of this week. I'll be there live. CSPOA.org to learn more and to attend. That's the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. Anyway, and so we were going to have our conference, and we had PayPal, and there were a lot of people signing up. I mean, every day you'd get, you know, 20, 30, 40 signups. And we were right on the cusp of having our event. PayPal chopped off our funds. And they basically said, because you violated the terms of our agreement. And we're like, what? Well, how do we violate the terms? They were vague. Anyway, long story short, we had an angel investor jump in and give us the money that we were missing because we couldn't charge credit cards and save our conference. Thank heavens to the angel investor. I don't know that they want to be mentioned, so I'm not going to say their name. They know who they are, and we're so grateful for them. But I don't want to mention them because I don't want to add heat. Does that make sense? I don't want to add heat. I know the FBI and the CIA and all these government bureaucrats listen to our radio program. They ask, you know, how do we get a copy or we need to record it ourselves? And I say, no need. Just download it from libertyroundtable.com or lovingliberty.net. We make it all available. We have nothing to hide. Nevertheless, so this angel investor saved our bacon and allowed us to carry out our conference without PayPal. We eventually threatened to sue PayPal, and they eventually turned back on our service. We haven't had a problem since in that venue, which I'm grateful for. However, I bring this up to say that was Operation Choke Point 1.0. And I didn't really realize that it had a formal name. I didn't really realize that it came straight from our government until this article in WND.com by Bob Unruh, who talks about Operation Choke Point 1.0 under the Barack Obama administration and Joe Biden, how it was basically Donald Trump tried to get rid of it. Now it's being brought back as Operation Choke Point 2.0 under Biden and Kamala Harris. Right now, here's the problem. The first time a few of us got attacked and shut down, and they kind of backed away when a lot of us pushed. Some people have been shut down permanently. And the details about the shutdown are interesting. And they don't make a lot of sense until you understand the whole program. So when we first got shut down and we pushed back, we didn't really understand the vagary. Is that a word? Anyway, the vagueness of the shutdown. Because it was like, what do you mean we violate your terms of agreement? We didn't understand because we really didn't violate any terms of the agreement at all. Okay? But when you understand Operation Choke Point, and when Bob Unruh lays out the details, and when you realize they're bringing the program back, you begin to understand what's going on. Now you say, well, Sam, it's only the racists that are getting shut down, or it's only the, insurrectionists or whatever. And so, but it isn't true, folks. That's a lie. Okay? I've never been a racist. I'm not an insurrectionist. The Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association is not an anti-government organization. In fact, we believe in the county sheriff. And we believe that elected official needs training and guidance and support. Some say, well, you believe the sheriff is the like a kingmaker in his own county and nobody can touch the sheriff. He's above the... We don't believe any of those things at all. You're lying. Come to our conference, ladies and gentlemen. CSPOA.org and find out what we really believe. We believe the sheriff does have tremendous power and is the chief executive in a given county. We do believe there are checks and balances to the sheriff's power. Folks, I'm the one that talks about checks and balances more than anyone you know. Who daily refers to checks and balances multiple times? Who daily tells you this is the greatest country on the face of the earth? Who tells you daily we stand for the proper role of government? Okay, I'm not anti-government. That's a lie. And I don't believe the sheriff is above reproach or above the law. He just has tremendous jurisdictional authority to stop out-of-control people who would violate the law. See? That's all. He has tremendous power to put in check those who would violate the law. And that includes other government officials, by the way. That's where they don't like it when we say that. They want you to believe the federal government has absolute power. See, that's a lie, too. The truth is there's checks and balances. So the sheriff has tremendous power. And if you don't believe me, how come Richard Mack and Bill Clinton literally went to war? And Richard Mack was told, you will do this, you will do that, you will do this, you will do that. That was the federal government to the county sheriff. And the sheriff said, no, I won't. And then the president of the United States said, Sheriff Richard Mack, if you don't do what I tell you, I will have you arrested. And Sheriff Richard Mack said, no, you won't. There are jurisdictional boundaries here. As I read the supreme law of the land, you don't have authority to do that, sheriff or president, said the sheriff. President, you don't have authority to do that. So Richard Mack went to court. They went all the way to the Supreme Court. Imagine that. Sheriff's getting a venue all the way to the Supreme Court. And in the Supreme Court decision, Bill Clinton was handed his head. Not literally, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go violent. Virtually speaking, in the courts, the majority decision led by Antonin Scalia said, hey, there are dual sovereigns here, and the federal government has no authority to force, to mandate, to dictate terms that must be carried out by the states and the local municipalities. There is no authority. And so Richard Mack won that case. Now, they try to dismiss this case and say, oh, that was a very unique situation. No, it was a very core discussion because it was over our right to keep and bear arms, Second Amendment discussions. And it was a very clear 10th Amendment states' rights case. And the mainstream press, attorneys, government officials seem to ignore this case. But look, we're not saying that the sheriff has 100% power. We never said such a thing. But we are saying he has more power than you think. And most sheriffs didn't agree with Richard Mack. And most people said, Richard Mack, you're going to get crushed by the feds. But as I've always said on your radio, good things happen when patriots stand up. All that we need is for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. But when good men and women stand up for the sacred cause of liberty, great things happen. So many times it's shocking and wonderful. And this is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
California Attorney General Javier Becerra has confirmation hearings this week to be the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. Becerra will face the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee on Tuesday and the Senate Finance Committee on Wednesday. Critics are saying he's literally the least qualified nominee in the history of the agency. No experience in health, no experience in managing something of this size. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on trial and faces bribery, breach of trust, and fraud in connection with a series of alleged corruption scandals. The testimony phase of the trial won't begin until after Israel's March 23rd elections. New York State police are reporting a soon-to-be dad was killed Sunday in Liberty, New York, after the device he was constructing for an upcoming gender reveal party exploded. The blast occurred at a home, killing 28-year-old Christopher Peckney and injuring his brother. Liberty is located about 100 miles northwest of New York City. This is USA Radio News.
It may soon be the biggest issue of our time, the NRA and your gun freedoms. President Biden says he will defeat the NRA and their efforts to limit your guns, tax them, and even put the NRA out of business permanently. All this week, Newsmax TV's Stinchfield tells the real story about Joe Biden's war on the NRA. Watch Stinchfield at 8 p.m. Eastern to find out how the NRA is fighting back. Stinchfield is unafraid to tell you the truth. Everyone is tuning in. Newsmax TV is now the fourth highest-rated cable news channel. It's on all major cable systems. Check your cable guide. If they don't carry Newsmax, call them. Or just download the free Newsmax app on your smartphone or smart TV and watch us anywhere. So watch Newsmax for Stinchfield and real news you can trust. 30 million Americans watch Newsmax all the time. You should too.
Let's get a stimulus update with Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau's Tim Berg.
The $1.9 trillion coronavirus rescue package proposed by House Democrats would increase the cost of living for many and kill jobs. That's according to the leading Republican on the House Budget Committee, Jason Smith. Meanwhile, Democrat from Pennsylvania, Matt Cartwright of the House Appropriations Committee, says we need to come together as a country and as a Congress to vote for this bill.
Let's come together as Republicans and Democrats and get it done. I totally agree with President Biden. I'd really like to see Republican buy-in on this.
Louisiana Republican Congressman Steve Scalise is no fan of the stimulus bill.
The $15 minimum wage, what does that have to do with COVID relief? Those small businesses are going to have an even harder time coming back when you go to a $15 minimum wage. These things have nothing to do with COVID.
Scalise speaking there on Fox News.
Thanks for listening. We are USA Radio News.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, that was a recap of yesterday's broadcast. Still available at libertyroundtable.com, lovingliberty.net. Spread the word, tell your neighbor. Live and on-demand radio free at your fingertips. Brought to you in part by Raw Honey, delivered directly to your door. To learn more, get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt at libertyroundtable.com. Or give Kurt a call. You can call him or text him on this number, 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. And tell them Sam sent you. Raw honey delivered directly to your door, baby. LocalHoneyMan.com is the website should you like the web channel for contact. LocalHoneyMan.com. All right. So News of the Networks Reviews to You starts now. And I want to talk about preparedness this second half hour. Headline that I got, News for Patriots, E-Alert. Mother Nature turns her winter fury on Deep South. Amen to that. It says we're used to reading about winter storms in the plains, the Midwest, New England. They're so frequent, sometimes we even tire about hearing them. But when the winter storm slams the Deep South, everyone takes notice. That's what occurred last week in Texas and in many other states. Historic winter storm Uri is what they're calling it. Packed a big punch. At least 70 people in the U.S. and Mexico died, and many were hospitalized. They say more than 9.7 million homes and businesses lost electrical power. All to frigid, record-breaking temperatures. And a killer storm featuring snow and ice across the South. In February 15th, for example, it was colder in Houston, Texas than it was in Houston, Alaska. Wow, I didn't know there was a Houston, Alaska. Oklahoma experienced its coldest since 1899. Now, they also talk about carbon monoxide poisonings that occurred. I guess this name is Dan Wood. He's senior director of the system operations at the Electrical Reliability Council of Texas. And he said that this event was well beyond the design parameters for a typical or even for an extreme Texas winter than you would normally plan for. In other words, he's just saying it's way worse. Among those who died during the, quote, storm called Uri, were two adults and a child who suffered carbon monoxide poisoning. Sometimes people bring barbecues into their homes to try to cook. They say more than 300 calls were received by Texas fire marshals. And I guess people used charcoal grills inside their homes. They called it a disaster within a disaster. Some people used generators in their homes. And they say this is a public health disaster within a public health emergency. All right. One fire department tweeted out this: please remember to never run a generator or a grill inside your home. These devices produce carbon monoxide, which is a, let's see what they say here, deadly, colorless, and odorless gas. Texas officials were frantically spreading the word about the problem. We have to get the message out. People are dying. We're losing family members to carbon monoxide poisoning. Water pipes freeze and burst. That's the next disaster that happened. As some Texans entered their third day without power, water pipes were freezing and bursting. In Houston, they say, icicles were hanging from kitchen faucets. Ambulances in San Antonio were unable to meet the demand. In Galveston, they expected to find bodies in homes where there was no power. And as of February 17th, I know this was days ago, but snow and sleet were still falling. And another storm was expected to strike the area. More than 170 million Americans in the United States were dealing with some kind of winter weather related alert. Even warming centers, folks, were closed. On February 14th, Texas established a winter peak demand for electricity because temperatures fell into the single digits. In Houston, believe it or not, warming centers were forced to close because they lost power. Walmart closed more than 350 stores across Texas and surrounding areas because the temperature drops increased demand for electricity. The cold was so extreme that it prevented natural gas from being delivered. That's why a lot of people lost electricity. U.S. Representative representative from Texas, he's a native. Let's see here. The power grid was minutes from completely failing. If it had completely failed, it would have been down for months. Rolling brownouts and rolling power outages are what saved the system from complete destruction. The storms moved east to Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Alabama. They were hit hard as well, they say. More than 109,000 people lost power in Louisiana, for example. Over 60,000 in Mississippi experienced blackouts. People in Kansas were urged to conserve energy as a state of emergency disaster was declared. Oklahoma said unprecedented demand for electricity was straining the state's electrical grid and natural gas infrastructure. The storm even caused damage and injuries in Georgia and Florida. It was so extreme. Believe it or not, power outages were experienced in 15 states, including North Carolina, Kentucky, and Virginia. Plus Virginia, Tennessee, Indiana, and Ohio. Road travel was hazardous, folks. Accidents in icy roads led to Interstate 10 being completely shut down. That's between Baton Rouge and Lafayette, Indiana, or Louisiana. I'm sorry, Lafayette, Louisiana. Nearly every major road was closed in both directions in Louisiana. Icy roadways were serious, serious problems. There were numerous accidents, including a 14-vehicle pileup, including a jackknife trailer. In Mississippi, ice was reported on roads and bridges in, what'd they say? 66 counties. Okay, there's all kinds of blockages and pileups due to cars going off the roads. In Alabama, there was a 20-car pileup that blocked traffic in both directions on U.S. Highway 231. Houston police were trying to deal with crashes everywhere. All right. Colorado City, Texas, got an additional rude awakening. Some say they expected the government to probably take care of them at all times. Okay. Power was lost. Arctic air swept in. Anyway, people are voicing their concerns in Facebook groups. They say this might have been an exception, but the fact is tax dollars don't help when it's an emergency like this. No one is immune, folks. When you have this extreme weather, the Deep South getting crushed by cold temperatures and more, and winter storms, no one's immune. Power outages, no one's immune. Power outages happen. It's important to have a backup power source. Now, I give you that whole write-up because News for Patriots really wrote up a great article kind of articulating what happened. And this is really sad. This is a horrible thing that happened, ladies and gentlemen. And you can blame it on HARP and say the government created it and they weaponized the weather and that it's man-made or man-created or man-engineered. May or may not be true in its conspiracy land. I do believe HARP's real. Whether HARP was used in this case and whether it has the ability to manipulate the weather to that degree, that precisely, and to do so, quote, untraceably, I don't know. Okay, I'm not really a scientist, and, you know, I do believe there's truth. I used to interview Dr. Nick Begich back in the day, and he documented HARP pretty well. Wrote books about it and everything. Alaska native. And so there's concerns, but whether it's man-made, whether God uses the weather to punish the people, I don't know. Here's what I do know. It's important that we all learn to prepare. Okay? Now, Texas, by the way, is on its own power grid. Did you know that? The country, that's the United States, is divided into three grids. I'll break that down for you in seconds on the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live, ladies and gentlemen.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The Strategy of Heaven Revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Texas is on its own power grid, okay? And they've always taken pride in the independence of Texas and that they're on their own power grid. And, well, now when it failed, everybody can't point the finger at somebody else fast enough, right? But Texas is on its own power grid. The United States, by the way, the country, is divided into three grids. One covers the eastern United States, another the western states, and the third is the Texas grid, which covers nearly the entire state of Texas. Now, the Texas grid is called ERCOT. E-R-C-O-T, ERCOT, and it's run by an agency of the same name, ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. That's where ERCOT comes from or whatever. Now, ERCOT was found back in 1970 in the wake of a major blackout in the Northeast that took place in November 1965. And the idea was that Texas wanted to be on its own, and their goal, they were tasked with the responsibility to manage grid reliability according to, quote, national standards at the time. However, the ERCOT grid of Texas has a jurisdiction beyond the authority of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. All right, that's interesting to kind of know. The result, they say, is an electrical island in the United States. Wow. Said Bill Magnus. He's CEO of ERCOT. He said that in an interview with USA Today. That independence, by the way, has been jealously guarded by the Texans, both by policymakers and the industry. Wow. ERCOT manages about 90% of the state's power for Texans' 26 million customers. Now we talk about a power grid failure. The state has a generating capacity of about 67,000 megawatts in the winter, compared with a peak capacity of about 86,000 megawatts in the summer. You say, well, why can they produce more in the summer than the winter? Because usually what happens is in the winter, a lot of these power grids use the time for maintenance. And so they take off certain, I don't know what you call it, power generating stations or whatever else to do maintenance on them and such like that. But planning for this winter, officials didn't imagine temperatures cold enough to freeze natural gas lines and stop wind turbines from spinning. They didn't expect that. Every one of our sources of power supply underperformed. So what guys like me would say is because they're relying on these new energies, it failed easier than if they had stable rock-solid coal plants. And we're right about that fact, although they won't admit it. What they say is, oh, you're wrong, all the sources failed. Yeah, but coal failed because you turned off the power plants. Coal failed because you didn't use them and you didn't have coal ready to go. They say every one of our sources of power underperformed. Every one of them is vulnerable to extreme weather, and climate events. None of them were winterized enough for this kind of extreme temperatures, right? Well, anyway, that's the story about Texas, a little bit about why it is and how it is and stuff like that. Now, would they have been better if we had one big massive grid? No, I don't think so. I think what might have happened is that it might have affected even more than it did. You would say, well, Sam, they could have rushed power from other places. They could have. But they also could have triggered a downing of the power system. Remember, the bigger it gets, it's always interconnected, okay? And when the power grid is completely interconnected, what it means is, yes, you can isolate regions and stuff like that. You can turn off certain sections and stuff. But you can also have certain sections send power surges or shortages or do different things that can take out the whole thing. So, yes, you can rush power different places with a single grid, but you can also have that rush problems across the interconnected reality, too, and cause problems. I don't personally believe in huge power grids. But nevertheless, there you go. But, folks, I want you to realize something that's important to understand. There is an article written by PatriotRising.com, which I think is really, really good. I don't know the Patriot Rising people, so I'm not endorsing them because I don't know them. I'm not downing them or saying that you can't trust them either. I'm just saying I don't know them, so I don't really know how to put a handle on it. But I did read an article they wrote that was so good, I want to share it with you. The headline says, quote, "The temporary collapse of Texas is a foreshadowing the total collapse of the United States," PatriotRising.com. Let me say this headline again. "The temporary collapse of Texas is a foreshadowing of the total collapse of the United States." And they say we're getting a very short preview of what will eventually happen to the United States as a whole. America's infrastructure is aging and crumbling. Our power grids were never intended to support so many people demanding so much power. Our water systems are a complete joke. And you know what? Texas is a failed state. If it can't handle even a single weather outage like that, things are going to get chaotic in this country. Remember, they weren't down for weeks. They were just down for a couple of days. I mean, this ice thing only happened for a few days, right? At this point, it has become clear that the power grid in Texas is in far worse shape than everyone ever imagined. When extreme cold hit the state, demand for energy surged big time, and the turbines and the new energy sources simply could not handle the demand. Millions of Texans were without power for days, and hundreds of thousands are still out of power as we write this article, they say. And now we are learning that Texas was just moments away from a catastrophic failure that could have resulted in blackouts for months, they say. Texas's power grid was seconds, minutes away from a catastrophic failure that could have left the grid down for months, they say. As millions of customers throughout the state got power restored, officials with the Electrical Reliability Council of Texas said Texas was dangerously close to a worst-case scenario. I can't even imagine how nightmarish things would have become in Texas if there actually would have been blackouts for months. According to one expert, the state was really right on the brink, right on the worst-case scenario reality. The worst case scenario, demand for power output strips the supply of power generation capabilities on the grid, causing equipment to catch fire, substations to blow, and power lines to go down. If the grid had gone totally offline, the physical damage to power infrastructure from overwhelming the grid could have taken months to repair. said Bernadette Johnson. She's the senior vice president of power and renewables at Enverus and oil and gas. It's a software and information company headquartered in Austin, Texas. For years, I've been telling my readers, says this author. And this author, by the way, is with PatriotRising.com. For years, I've been telling my readers that they have got to have a backup plan for power. Because during a major emergency, the grid could absolutely fail. Boy, howdy, have we seen that, huh? And when it fails, it can literally cost some people their lives. I was deeply saddened when I learned that one man actually froze in Texas, sitting in his own recliner. As Texas suffered through days of power outages, a man reportedly froze to death in his recliner with his wife clinging to him for life, but died too. The man was found dead in his home. Most Americans don't realize that the rest of the world actually has much better power infrastructure than we do in America. Just check out the numbers to see what we're talking about. In Japan, the average home sees only 4 minutes of power outages per year. In the American Midwest, the figure is 92 minutes per year. And in the Northeast, it's 214 minutes. That's just regular outages, nothing caused by extreme weather or fires or anything else. As our population has grown and as our infrastructure has aged, performance has become worse and worse. In fact, things ran better in the 1980s. Imagine that. Why, you say? Because we didn't have near the aging of our systems as we have now. We didn't have near the demand that we have now. According to an analysis by Climate Central, major outages affecting more than 50,000 homes of businesses grew more than 10 times more common from the 1980s to 2012. I know it's a little bit old data even then, right? From 2003 to 2012, weather-related outages doubled in a 2017 report. The American Society of Civil Engineers reported that there were 3,571 total outages in 2015, lasting 49 minutes on average. The U.S. Energy Administration reports that in 2016, the average utility customer had 1.3 power interruptions, and their total blackout time averaged 4 hours. Okay? America is literally crumbling all around us, and it's getting worse with each passing year. Our water systems are a whole nother example, ladies and gentlemen. The reason I bring all this up is not to be negative, but to give you guys an understanding of where we are. What do you need to do about it? You need to prepare to, one, live without power. Two, live with less power. Learn what takes power and what doesn't, and what can be easily supported and what can't. Right? Ladies and gentlemen, there's ways to handle this. We got to get together as a people, and we've got to prepare. Our prayers are with the American people, that we can turn to God and then do our very best, and somehow we'll meet in the middle, huh? Repentance is key to solutions, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake about that reality. And then getting on our knees and praying for God's guidance and getting up and going to work, those are the answers. Simple, maybe so. Oversimplification? Possibly. But they are the answers. God save the Republic.